This week on the Allegheny Front, a special show about how pollution and climate change can affect our mental health. From feelings about the magnitude of the climate crisis.
As a young person, you're thinking about all these things and you're trying to grapple with how are these adults not thinking about these things. Yeah, definitely there's anger there.
To getting more and more people the resources they'll need to process those feelings.
We really have to get good at rethinking how we can reach a ton of people across that spectrum. And the only way we're going to do that is by enlisting communities to be part of doing that.
Plus, how pollution can make changes to our brains that put us at risk for mental illness.
A lot of researchers think it's related to the inflammation that air pollution causes.
Those stories are coming up on the Allegheny Front. Stay with us. The news about climate change can feel daunting. It's unclear if promises made at the recent UN climate conference in Glasgow will be enough to keep global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius and keep the most dire impacts of climate change at bay. Meanwhile, another extreme weather event, this time a storm in British Columbia, cut off the city of Vancouver from the rest of Canada because of flooding and mudslides that washed out roads and rail lines. The looming specter of climate change is causing anxiety in a growing number of people, not just those forced out of their homes by storms or wildfires, but also those who hear about natural disasters and what's predicted to happen in the coming years. As part of a series called Pollution's Mental Toll, the Allegheny Front's Julie Grant reports about the troubles climate anxiety is causing and how the mental health community is trying to help.
Mihitha Ramachandran has spent years worrying about climate change. She's a 16-year-old junior at Fox Chapel Area High School. On the day we met in September, she was on her way to a student climate strike in Pittsburgh, along with about 150 other young people chanting and carrying signs.
My sign, fight for our future. It is our future.
She says sometimes it feels like there's a natural disaster, like a storm or wildfire, nearly every day.
And you're constantly being like berated with this kind of news that it just feels so urgent and so necessary to learn about it and to know what's going on.
She remembers when she first started looking online about climate change in middle school. She felt panic, but didn't know how to talk about it. A recent survey of 10,000 young people aged 16 to 25 worldwide found that nearly 60% are very worried or extremely worried about climate change. They reported feeling sad, afraid, anxious, and angry.
As a young person, you're thinking about all these things and you're trying to grapple with how are these adults not thinking about these things. Yeah, definitely there's anger there.
Claire Cohn often hears these kinds of concerns from young people. She's a psychiatrist at Southwood Psychiatric Hospital for Children and Adolescents in suburban Pittsburgh and raised six kids herself. So she hears from young people in her office and at home.
And their biggest concerns is the world going to be worth living in by the time they're ready to be on their own? And should they have children? Because is the world going to be unlivable by the time they have children? Some of them even feel like it may be the end of the world.
She's been a psychiatrist for more than 40 years, but didn't understand that climate change could impact mental health until after Hurricane Katrina in 2005. That's when a boy came into her office with his mother. They had relocated to Pittsburgh after surviving the disastrous storm in Louisiana.
They had lost everything, and they almost lost their lives, and they were temporarily separated because of that whole big flood.
Profound traumatic events like this can impact how a child's brain develops. It can give kids more trouble with learning and memory and make it more difficult to modulate emotions.
You see a lot of these kids, like my little patient with Katrina, develop ADHD symptoms. They'll have problems with emotional outbursts. So I begin to realize it's not just interpersonal violence that can cause those kind of traumas. It's the climate, too, and if we don't address this, we're going to have more kids with trauma.
Susan Clayton says while the number of people displaced by natural disasters is still relatively low, especially in the U.S., the number of adults worried about climate change is increasing. She's a psychology professor at the College of Worcester in Ohio and co-author of a new report from the American Psychological Association on climate change and mental health.
Particularly in the last couple of years, we just hear more and more people who are worried at this very profound level.
Clayton has been looking at whether climate anxiety is clinically significant as a threat to mental health. In her work, she surveyed 400 adults about how climate change was affecting them and found that it varied.
Between 15 or 20 or 25% of the people we surveyed said that at least some of the time they had trouble concentrating because they were thinking about climate change, or they had nightmares, or they were crying, or other impacts that I think suggest that climate anxiety is beginning to have an impact on our lives.
A poll last year by the American Psychiatric Association found that more than two-thirds of Americans are somewhat or extremely anxious about the impact of climate change on the planet, and more than half are anxious about its impact on their own mental health. Elizabeth Haas is chair of the association's Climate Change Committee and a practicing psychiatrist.
What I'm seeing most is grief. Like the people that actually talk to me about climate change, it's because of the losses that they are seeing around them.
She hears grief about the loss of animals and about the destruction of the natural environment from adults. She says some adults get triggered at the mere mention of apocalyptic change, while others display symptoms of something called continuous traumatic stress,
which is the model that we use to understand children who are in chronically abusive or neglectful situations. And it puts a kind of low-grade strain on their stress system to know that people are not going to respond to them, that people are going to mistreat them, and there's nothing they can do about it. And I think a lot of people are essentially feeling that as we watch our leadership fail us so completely.
She says there really isn't much scientific study on the psychological effects of climate change.
Mental health has been relatively late to the table in terms of responding to the climate crisis, and we have a lot of research to do.
Even though there aren't specific studies on how climate change affects mental health, she says there's plenty of research on how the impacts of climate change affect people. For example, air pollution and heat.
As temperatures go up, or in the wake of an acute heat wave, there are increases in violence and suicide, which are completely independent of social class.
Haas and other mental health professionals say the problems that will come with climate change will be so widespread that the current system won't be able to handle it. Psychiatrist Gary Belkin is pushing for immediate action.
We've got to get communities and people ready for the social and emotional effects of environmental collapse.
Belkin is a former deputy health commissioner of New York City and founded the Billion Minds Institute, which is focused on the social aspects of climate change. He says there just aren't enough trained mental health experts.
Our profession and the basic setup of clinical mental health services is a very poor match for the challenges that we have now and that are just going to be increasing.
After seeing how people have treated each other during the COVID pandemic, Belkin is not confident in society's ability to pull together, but he says that's what's needed.
Because success in dealing with that and in enduring that is going to fall on us and our social ties and our ability to take action and our connectedness.
Belkin wants to flip the current model, where individuals seek one-on-one treatment in an office, on its head and move to a more community-based approach to help people deal with their climate anxiety. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
Later in the show, Julie Grant will look at a move toward community-based mental health care and other solutions to climate anxiety.
The goals of this method are to help people learn how to express themselves, sort of have emotional literacy, how to talk about their feelings.
That's coming up later on the Allegheny Front. If you or someone you know is facing mental and/or substance use disorders, you can call a free, confidential treatment referral and information service 24/7 every day of the year. It's 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-4357. This week, we're featuring stories from a series produced in partnership with Environmental Health News called Pollution's Mental Toll, how air, water, and climate change shape our mental health. As part of the series, Christina Marusik, a reporter for Environmental Health News in Pittsburgh, has written about how exposure to certain types of pollution, like particle pollution in the air or lead in water, can put people at risk for mental illness. I spoke with her recently about it. You cite a number of studies that link air pollution with mental health. What are the most compelling findings?
I talked with a couple of researchers. One did a study on air pollution and mental health that found that the more air pollution people were exposed to as children, the more likely they were to experience mental illness when they turned 18, which is the age when initial symptoms of mental illness tend to first appear. And I also spoke with the co-author of a study that was the first one to look at short-term exposure to air pollution and its effects on children. And so that first study I mentioned looked at very long-term impacts. And then this second study looked at emergency room visits for children related to mental illness and found that when there was a spike in air pollution, there was also a corresponding spike in kids who visited the emergency room for things like anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder, and schizophrenia in the next 3 days.
Are these studies part of an emerging field, or have they been going on a long time?
So they're both relatively new studies, and this is an area that's been kind of under-researched at this point. I chatted with both the researchers I spoke with for the story, and they both said, you know, initially scientists assumed that air pollution primarily impacted the lungs, and so that's kind of where the scientific research was focused. And then eventually they found out that it also impacts the heart. And then, you know, the more they kept looking, the more they found that air pollution has negative impacts on just about every system in our bodies, including the brain.
Do researchers know how air pollution could be impacting mental health?
Scientists are still trying to figure out exactly what happens in our brains that affects our mental health, but a lot of researchers think it's related to the inflammation that air pollution causes. Chronic inflammation in the brain can damage neurons that are involved in the brain and the nervous system's regulatory responses, and then that in turn can impact our mental health. And there are a number of animal studies that have looked at this. They have found that persistent inflammation in the brain causes symptoms in animals that mimic depression or bipolar disorder.
Does pollution have to be over federal air quality limits to negatively impact mental health?
So there's a growing body of research that suggests that air pollution at levels well below what's legally allowed are still harmful to lots of different systems in our body, and that includes our brains. So that study I mentioned that looked at children's emergency room visits after a quick spike in air pollution, all the levels of air pollution they looked at in that study were lower than the federal limit for daily air pollution levels. And they still saw, you know, that sort of substantial spike. And so I took a look at EPA data for Allegheny County to see, you know, how often is our air pollution at the level they looked at that they said sent extra kids to the emergency room with mental illness complaints. And in 2020, it was 129 days. We had 129 days. I only looked at one air monitor. We have several in the region. So it might have been more than that. But at looking at one air monitor, we had at least 129 days in 2020 where our air pollution was higher than that level that was found to send extra kids to the emergency room in this study.
Who is most at risk when it comes to air pollution and mental health impacts?
Children tend to be the most vulnerable to any kind of health impact from pollution because they're still developing and those processes are very complex. And so if they get interrupted, it can cause problems. And then environmental justice communities, which are communities that tend to have high levels of poverty and tend to have larger populations of communities of color. And examples of what some researchers call toxic zip codes are abundant in Western Pennsylvania. So those are regions where poverty and environmental injustice and racism kind of overlap to create a lot of negative health impacts. Those communities are particularly vulnerable because they have so many of these other stressors. So in that study that looked at children's emergency room visits after an air pollution spike, they found that kids who were experiencing the highest levels of poverty were the most likely to experience a mental illness crisis after a spike in air pollution. And the researcher who led that study said, you know, hypothesized that poverty and crime also cause stress, which results in inflammation. So it's possible that that inflammation is kind of worsening the impacts of the inflammation that's caused by exposure to air pollution.
You also looked at lead pollution in water. It's one way children are exposed to lead, and there is no safe level of lead exposure for kids. What's the connection to mental health?
Children who are exposed to high levels of lead tend to have cognitive deficits and develop learning disabilities as kids. And what's kind of new in the research is this discovery that children who are exposed to lead also are more likely to develop symptoms of mental illness either once they reach adulthood or in middle age. So they're learning that, you know, this was another one of those things where scientists just kind of assumed that the only thing that was happening was this kind of immediately measurable difference in the way kids were able to make their way through school after they'd been exposed to lead as babies or little kids. And now they're finding that actually some of the changes that happen in the brain when people are exposed to lead might not manifest until they're much older.
What did you learn through reporting these stories that surprised you?
I've thought a lot about the health impacts of the air pollution we have here in Western Pennsylvania. And before I set out to report these stories, I didn't think about mental illness as one of the things that could be impacted by this. And I was really surprised that I reached out to the state health department and I reached out to the Allegheny County Health Department to say, you know, is this on your radar? Have you researched these links? Are you considering communities that might need additional mental health resources because they face high levels of air pollution? And the answer was no, that this isn't something that is actively being pursued by public health officials right now. And I think I was also surprised that there are lots of local clean air advocates who this was kind of new to as well. And again, you know, the research is emerging and more research needs to be done, but the research that has been done is pretty startling and compelling. You know, we need to think about this in a big picture way more than in an individual way. So how can we help our communities overall have better mental health and get people the care that they need and prevent emergency room visits for mental illness by addressing things like lead exposure and air pollution?
Thank you so much for your work on this and for talking with me about it.
Yeah, thanks so much for talking with me about this.
Christina Marusik is a reporter with Environmental Health News. Her stories are part of a 5-part series with the Allegheny Front called Pollution's Mental Toll: How Air, Water, and Climate Change Shape Our Mental Health. It includes a list of resources to support mental health and ways to work for solutions to air and water pollution in communities. You can find that and more at AlleghenyFront.org/mental health. You're listening to the Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapple. What's it like to move to a city like Pittsburgh and suddenly realize there's industrial air pollution that you can see and smell?
The air is a little thick, a little hazy, a little humid. I don't know what it is yet, but I already have this feeling like, oh God, what have I done?
Next week, a special show about what happens when one of the risks we live with every day, usually without a second thought, suddenly, perhaps painfully, becomes visible. Don't miss it. The more people experience climate change, or even hear about storms and wildfires, the more it is expected to impact their mental well-being. As part of our series, Pollution's Mental Toll, the Allegheny Front's Julie Grant reports that some mental health experts have started to prepare for the rising need they anticipate in the years ahead.
A small group of high school students from around Pittsburgh have set up chairs in a circle on the patio outside of Phipps Conservatory. They're here because they're concerned about climate change, and they each have their own reasons.
My name is Claire Bertolette. I am a ninth grader at Alderdice High School in Pittsburgh, PA, and I'm afraid that in the future, life is not going to be like it is today, and we're not going to be living as comfortably, and so I feel like in the future, it's going to be too late.
My name is Malcolm Kurtz. I am a junior at Alderdice High School. I'm an avid hiker and bird watcher, and really concerned with how species are affected by climate change.
These and other students gather monthly to talk and plan ways to work on the issue. I kind of expected to hear they were angry with adults, sad or depressed about the state of the planet. And they did express some of those feelings, like Ava DiGiacomo, a sophomore at North Allegheny High School.
It's kind of like a helpless feeling. Like this summer, I started spending a lot more time outside. And there were moments when I would just sit and think, this world is so beautiful and it's slowly getting like ruined. And sometimes it feels like personally, I can't do anything that's really going to make a big change. And that's not an easy feeling to deal with.
But these students are creating community around climate action, so they don't have to do it alone. On the evening we met in October, some had just attended a climate march, and the group had organized a bicycling event called Pedaltopia. Rebecca Carter is a junior at Pittsburgh Kappa.
Things like Pedaltopia, where we can get together and do something in nature as a group and as a group of activists, can be really helpful and cathartic.
Psychiatrist Elizabeth Haas thinks students like this are on the right track. She's chair of the American Psychiatric Association's Climate Change Committee and says feelings of eco-anxiety, of grief and longing for what's been lost in the environment, and worry about what will happen with climate change are all becoming more pervasive. She's among a growing group of mental health professionals pushing for more climate awareness among counselors. Haas says treating climate anxiety is not the same as clinical anxiety disorders.
It's a different animal, it's a different response when you're facing a real-world problem.
Haas compares it with treating someone with claustrophobia. She would encourage that person to face their fear and spend time in enclosed spaces like a subway car. But that doesn't always make sense.
That is not an appropriate response when the subway car is on fire. The subway's on fire, you don't want to sit there and let your fear wash over you, right? You want to start doing stuff.
When her patients express concerns about natural disasters, climate change, and ecological collapse, she advises them to find ways to talk with their family and friends about it, and to take action, to join a climate group, write to their local congressperson, or pack up photographs and important belongings in an emergency backpack.
Even just doing something like that gives you a greater sense of control, and it creates a safer space for you to be in when something bad is happening.
Psychiatrist Gary Belkin wants the mental health community to start taking action too, and quickly. He says there's already more mental health needs than there are available therapists, and climate change, the heat, droughts, and wildfires, and the general background stress it causes is going to make that worse.
We really have to get good at rethinking how we can reach a ton of people across that spectrum. And the only way we're going to do that is by enlisting communities to be part of doing that.
Belkin is a former deputy health commissioner of New York City and is now focused on the social aspects of climate change. He spearheaded a program in New York where mental health professionals trained employees at childcare centers, churches, and programs for at-risk youth, places that he calls the front lines for mental health.
And we skilled those staff in screening for distress and illness, for basic counseling skills. We have to engineer things so you don't have to look for care or support. You trip over it.
One group on the front lines in Pittsburgh is starting to look into climate change and mental health, the Homewood Children's Village. President Walter Lewis says they have advocates who stay in touch with their 300 members. They focus on education, economics, food, and health, including mental health.
Probably 3-4 years ago for sure, it would have never dawned on me to think about some of the types of trauma and mental health impacts of climate change.
Disadvantaged communities like Homewood are expected to experience worse climate impacts than their wealthier neighbors. So even though his advocates are not mental health professionals, Lewis says he can still raise their awareness that a flood in the basement or some other climate-related event can be traumatic for clients.
Hey, you know, we just had a heat wave. You know, these are some things you might want to think about when you're talking to, you know, your families or the children that you work with.
As the number of people reporting anxiety and stress around climate change grows, others in Pittsburgh are trying to expand the available mental health care.
Hello, everyone. My name is Gloria Evans, and I am one of the certified facilitators for integrated community therapy. We want to welcome you tonight.
This integrated community therapy facilitator is using a technique developed and practiced in Brazil for 27 years to bring groups of people together to share their experiences, learn from each other, and gradually deal with problems in their families and neighborhoods.
The goals of this method are to help people learn how to express themselves, sort of have emotional literacy, how to talk about their feelings.
Ken Thompson is a community psychiatrist based at the Squirrel Hill Health Center in Pittsburgh.
Also, how to help people develop a sense of empathy with each other.
Facilitators are trained over months, not years. There are now around 40,000 facilitators in Brazil. Thompson's group is starting to train facilitators here. And as the climate changes, he says people are going to need safe spaces like this where they can talk and connect with others.
When you share that, it becomes a real powerful glue. And I feel like we need glue. We need a lot of glue in this society, you know, at least to keep us hanging together.
In our polarized society, efforts like this are starting to help more people relearn how to talk with others and see their shared humanity, and hopefully reweave some of the community fabric that's been pulled apart. Because as climate change worsens, people are going to need each other. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
That story was produced in partnership with Environmental Health News in a five-part series called Pollution's Mental Toll: How Air, Water, and Climate Change Shape Our Mental Health. Find all of the stories, including reporting about air and water pollution's impact on the brain and a resource guide, at AlleghenyFront.org/mental-health. The project was funded in part by the Pittsburgh Media Partnership. Thanks for joining us on the Allegheny Front. If you miss an episode, find the Allegheny Front podcast each week at our website, AlleghenyFront.org/episodes, or wherever you get your podcasts. Kathy Naur is the executive producer of our show. Andy Kubis does our social media. Engineering assistance by Tom Hurley. I'm Kara Holsapple.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from the Pittsburgh Foundation, the Heinz Endowments, the Colcom Foundation, the Foundation for Pennsylvania Watersheds, and the Cornell Douglas Foundation. The Richard King Mellon Foundation and the Robert F. Schumann Foundation support our coverage of conservation. The Park Foundation supports our coverage of energy.